Can you all hear me up the back there? Will you be able to hear me when the music's playing? All right. Okay. This talk is called Real World Sound Editing with Sweep, and it's an overview of an application that I've been working on for a couple of years now, mainly over the last 12 months, called Sweep. It's a sound editor. You saw it just playing there. And I'm going to give a brief sort of description of the project and what the software itself does and how it came about as well. Yesterday I gave a tutorial about how to use it, which was basically all about how to use Sweep to edit sounds and to do DJing and things like that. I'll give a bit of a demo of that stuff again today, but not in anywhere near as much depth. And today as well I'll be going into some implementation details, which I didn't go into at all yesterday. First thing that I want to introduce though is Scrubby. I can't ever introduce Sweep without introducing Scrubby. And Scrubby is this dude who's on my t-shirt right here. He's made it into my wardrobe. He's made it into a lot of things in my life, including my computer system as well, all my computer system. Very elite scrubbing dude. We'll find out a bit more about what he does and what he sounds like and what difference he makes in the whole task of editing sounds. Just like to make some acknowledgements. Pixar, who gave me a bit of a kick in the pants earlier in the year and said, we want to use this software, we want to move to Linux. We want to use this for editing sounds. And I said, ooh, okay, that's cool. I don't know about that. And sort of forced me to work on make it a bit more solid and usable. CSRO, who's my employer, who have allowed me to continue working on them, and we're working on some research projects there as well. So today, what I'm going to talk about, the ranting and raving is just sort of going to be whenever I feel like it through the talk and through the demos and things like that. I'll give some demos, just two main ones, just to give you an idea of the editing that you can do with Sweep and also the DJing and why the hell you can do both things in the same program and why it makes sense. I'll go through some of the hacking. And at the end, I'll do something I don't really like doing, which is sort of, you know, giving future work kind of where this project is heading kind of notes. And I feel comfortable doing that because I've basically done the back-end stuff and I just need to write some, you know, interfaces, fluffy, easy. Anyone could do that. So that's sort of stuff I've half done already. Alrighty. If you came along yesterday, you saw this slide, and I'm going to give a completely different rant about usability today. So this is rant number two. And if you come along to the pub with me tonight, you can hear point three, which is also called usability. So basically, usability is important in the sound editor, and I'll give you a bit of point one later. But the second point on usability is about development. Usability when you're writing software, writing tarballs, getting them out to people and expecting them to run them, getting your code used by real users. Real users are a very special breed of people. It's actually most people in the world, and we shouldn't, you know, look down on them with any kind of arrogance or anything like that. Basically, I don't know if, okay, I'm involved in the Linux audio community. Linux audio is a sort of a growing community and there's some cool hackers around. But it suffers from a lot of projects sort of festering away in CVS and never really making the light of day, having a whole bunch of features that don't quite work right and, you know, it sort of crashes randomly and all those kinds of things. And the problem there seems to be that people write code that meets spec, like, and I'm guilty of this myself. I didn't think this was a problem a couple of years ago. I started Sweep in about 2000 and thought, I want to make a sound editor, have a sound editor. There aren't any decent sound editors on Linux. And so I wrote this thing that you can cut and edit and do stuff with sounds. And it met spec. You know, in my head, I thought, I want a sound editor. I want to be able to cut, copy, paste and run filters and things like that. And it did that. But it was crap. It just sort of fell over all over the place. But it was hard to use. You couldn't interact with it anywhere near as fluidly, as easily as you can now. And I didn't really think that the random sort of bugs and stuff, the random things like not looking at permissions and, you know, getting config files sorted out properly and stuff like that. There's all these little niggly details, bringing up error dialogues instead of dumping stuff out to stand out and shit like that. There are all these little details there, things when you're actually building the code. I was handing out tarballs to people. You know, everyone always wants the latest bleeding edge stuff. And at the same time, they want to sort of configure and make and work magically. And then they'll have a package. They'll, I've got the library installed. Yeah, but you don't have the develop version installed. Ooh, what does that mean? And what I figured was, okay, it'd be nice and easy to do what most everyone else does, which is just write a configure script which goes and, you know, does one line of check for each thing and then dies randomly if it fails. And I had this guy who's working at a radio station in Belgium who was very persistent, and he kept coming back to me saying, like, you know, this failed here, it didn't work here, this doesn't work. And he was trying it on various different distributions and all this fun stuff, trying it out in lots of different ways. And through talking to him, my configure script for this, just checking about 3 or 4 or 5 libraries, grew to about 600 lines of just configure shell script stuff, checking what headers and libraries and package AC local stuff, whatever you've got installed, trying to determine what state your system's in, trying to get around weird dependencies on different versions of libraries and stuff like that, rather than saying, you must have this bleeding edge version of Alpha and this one of Vorbis and this of that or whatever. Just trying to deal with what people actually have, you know, like on their systems. People don't always have the latest bleeding edge stuff, everything out of CVS or, you know, exactly the versions that appeared on the latest Red Hat CD or whatever. People have different stuff, and often you can't just, you know, force them to change. You have to deal with what people actually have. So that was an enlightening experience. And through dealing with users like that, and I'm really dealing with, you know, real users, people who are using this to do work, do application level stuff. They're not hackers. They're not doing text processing either, and they're not sitting on servers and things like that. These are desktop users. These are people, if they're doing work, they're working in media and stuff like that, and they just want to get stuff done. They expect software to just work. Anytime they reach a point in the program where it doesn't do exactly what they expect, exactly what's intuitive, that's a bug, you know? I mean, you can't just sort of have some weird modes of behavior and expect people to work it out. Go read the manuals. No one reads the manuals. Everyone knows that. So I'll stop that rant there and get on to a bit of demoing what's going on. But the point is that I got through all this, and I learned what I didn't realize a year ago when my program was in the same state as a lot of other people's software, that all these little things mattered, and all these little things take as much time to fix up as all the cool stuff, all the excellent features and all the fun stuff. You know, it's fun to hack away and make stuff work and break and work and break and break. It takes just as long to fix it up properly, to make it check for errors, to make it do the right thing. So persevere and work on it. And then if you do, people will actually start using it. People will come and go, hey, this is cool, I can use it, it works. Let's move. How to get around InSweep. This is all about the usability part. 90% of the time people spend editing sounds is not actually editing. It's not cutting and chopping and pasting and processing. It's just moving around. This applies to any kind of editor whatsoever. Text, any kind of data model stuff. So what I decided for Sweep was to make it really easy to scan around and zoom around, make it really easy to play with your sounds as well. I figured when these dudes from Pixar mailed me and said, we want to move from Windows to Linux, we want to use this software to edit sound. But what are they up against? They're up against things like SoundForge. And I found a review of SoundForge in a magazine. Oh, your latest version, what's it up to? First paragraph of the magazine said, the most important feature in any sound editor is its usability. That's like 50% of what they look at. And I'm like, okay, cool, make it usable. Hence, scrubbing. Audible feedback at the cursor position. We'll play with this now. Let's play with this. Basically, with Sweep, you can you can play a file. And you can grab Scrubby here. You can put the playback cursor anywhere you want in the file, and as well as that, you can drag it around like that, like dragging vinyl around on a record, like moving the reel-to-reel tapes on a tape machine. So it makes it heaps easier to get into the file and move around with it. Similarly, just watching the file, you can scan around in the file like that. If you scan around while it's playing, it scans around with you. You can zoom in and out really easily. Okay, obviously you can zoom in and out with the keys with the buttons on the screen as well. You can zoom in and out with the wheel on the mouse. That makes it easy to just move around. Put the cursor somewhere, zoom in there or not. When you're selecting, it scrubs on that so you can hear the parts of the sound that you're selecting. The problem here was, or the problem with other... The problem with other sound editors was that, what I always felt was that you're editing this weird blob of data and you could never really see what was going on, or you could see this blob and you had to imagine what was actually going on in the sound. And sound's much more complex than what you can represent on screen, so having like an on-screen editor where you sort of try to imagine, you're always displaced from the sound that you can hear and the visual representation, which is what you're cutting and pasting and whatever. So I made it always have audio happening. And that's scrubby. Just to briefly go around here, so we've got just a normal sort of desktop application. You know, you've got a file menu and edit. You can do all kinds of edits and things. You can play with selections. You can view the file in different colors or whatever you want. Oh, this one we're at. You can play with channels. You can play with processing. Alrighty. So the first thing with selections, you can have multi-region selections. This is a cookie cutter kind of thing, just like you've got in the GIMP or Photoshop. People thought this was really novel in the sound editor. I don't really know why. So you hold down Control and then you select another bit as well. Hooray. But that's really useful when you're editing. Obviously, it's useful when you're editing like people speaking and things like that. You can select individual words and you can work just on the words and take out the rest or take noise out of the rest and things like that. Of course, you can chop words around. When you've got... Okay, so... Oops, I lost that. Okay. So we've got some complex selection. I'll hit the right mouse button menu. And you can invert that selection as well. So, obviously, if you don't have multi-region selections, you can't invert them. So then you can operate on the rest of it rather than the part that you selected and things like that. Okay. Standard. You can... clear just the bits that you don't like. So you can go edit, clear, bang, clears those bits out, leaves the rest, undo that. And you can cut and copy and you can chop out the bits you want even if they're really complex. And paste them into new files or whatever. Okay, normally with text, all you can do is cut and paste, chop a bit here, put it into there. With sound, it's different to text and it's kind of different to video. You're not just dealing with something that you want to move around. We can actually hear multiple things at once. We can hear a couple of people talking at once. We can hear someone talking over here and music happening over here, and our brains will interpret it all. So with sound, you don't just want to be able to insert what you're pasting. Just undo that. Chop. There are a few different paste methods in Sweep. So let's say, this would be a bad example if I chop some random bit here. I'll copy that file there, copy that portion that's selected. I can insert a copy of it over there, that's fine. What I can also do is mix it in from there onwards. So you choose the level of the stuff in the clipboard and the level of the original file you want. Mix them down a bit, and then it'll blend the two together. And here we'll just have some awful cacophony of... Okay, so I've got those two bits playing together at the same time. And also, I'll undo that because it was decent enough timing. The other paste method is a crossfade where you can blend from here with a clipboard from what was there before into what's in the clipboard. And so it gives a more subtle sort of merge. All right, so that just faded from one sound across to the other. All good. And as you saw, there's undo. You can undo and redo, of course, and there's also an edit history, so you can see exactly what operations you've done, and you can work back through them if you want. Or you can select the whole original state and just go, wow, and it'll play back right down to there. Alrighty. Just briefly, the file formats that Sweep supports that lets you edit. Lots of PCM file formats, voice ones as well, and compressed formats. The PCM ones are things like WAV files, AFAU RAW ones, things that you rip straight off a CD, for example, or that you record straight off a microphone. Some voice ones, GSM ones and so forth, are supported in LibSound file as other raw PCM ones. And that means that you can use it for telephony stuff or whatever as well. The pre-compressed ones, it uses Ogg Vorbis and Speaks, so you can read and write both of them, and it's got good configurable dialogues for saving those ones. Ogg Vorbis, you've probably all heard of, is similar to MP3, lets you have good quality music files at about the same bit rate as MP3, and better quality than MP3, at about a tenth the size of the original data. Speaks is a new format designed by a guy in Canada, and it's recently joined the ziff.org project, so it's part of the whole Ogg thing. And it's designed just for speech, so it works just on the bandwidth that human voices speak in. It works best just on one speaker, but it gives you compression rates about a hundredth the size, less than 1% of the original format of the audio usually. And that's one hell of a saving. And that's used in a few, it's a recent format, but it's already used in a few telephony projects, things like my own phone and things like that. So you can load and save those files in Sweep. With MP3s, you can load MP3s into Sweep, but I had that loaded as an Ogg originally. Let's say we want to save that as an MP3, then Sweep goes, not allowed due to patent restrictions and so forth, cannot be legally supported, just the way it is, and it tells you to use Ogg Vorbis instead, which is better. So if you're into the politics of all this stuff, you'll love that. Alrighty, now the next thing that you can do, the next fun thing that you can do with Sweep is use plugins. If you've worked with music programs on Windows or Mac, there are plugin standards like VST and audio units and things like that. Labspre is a simple plugin format and just lets you DSP stuff. There's more than 100 plugins now, and there are a lot of basic effects and things like that. I'll briefly demo two of the things that are cool to work with there. Okay, I'll quit that file. Yeah, that changed that, okay. Okay, when you first start up Sweep, it gives you a nice little dialogue saying, "Hello, my name is Krabby. Welcome to Sweep." And you can choose what you want to do from there. Scrubby gets around everywhere. And what I'll do, first of all, I'll just to bore the people who were in the tutorial yesterday, I'll just do something that was very popular yesterday, but it'll be very, very quick. Just one effect. Just let me do one effect, because people loved it. Which file was it? This one. Okay. Which some drunk friends of mine recorded once. Okay. And basically the problem with this file was that it was recorded by this band, put down a disc recorder or something, and just like with a microphone on the floor in between the band playing. And so it was pretty shoddy quality. The band wasn't mic'd up properly or anything like that. So the whole recording kind of sounds like it was, sounds a bit muddy, there's a bit missing and stuff. Sounds like it was recorded in a small room or a bathroom or something somewhere. And what we found yesterday, just applying some simple sort of audio engineering stuff. Yeah, it sounds really echoey up there. Okay, now we'll just apply one thing, which is a EQ. Equalization lets you work with the frequencies of a sound, kind of like exactly like a graphic equalizer that you might be used to in a home stereo unit. What we're going to do though is, use our knowledge of audio processing, audio engineering. What I didn't mention yesterday is that this is really just a sort of cheap trick. The human ear, just due to psychoacoustics, the way that we've evolved, we respond to certain frequency ranges. And one of those is about 2 to 3 to 4 kilohertz. And I don't know, it's because like when people smile, those frequencies come out. So if you want to achieve this effect, smile more when you talk. maybe student mother's voices or something. So we've got this muddy sort of sound at the moment. What we'll do is make not much of a change, but just a little bump up here. A bit much. It was a bit too chirpy. But basically, what happens is that it sounds brighter just because we feel that that is a much brighter wave. That we respond to those frequencies. So we think, ooh, that sounds lovely. Whereas before, it sounded muddy. Just a bit more subtle. As opposed to before, where it sounded really sort of closed in. That's a simple kind of thing you can do. There's, as I said, there are about 100 plugins there. There are about 4 or 5 that you want to use normally on a day-to-day basis that you use sort of in every editing session. Things like delays and reverbs and things like that you'd use quite a lot. Things like Barry Satan Maximizer you probably wouldn't find yourself using too much. Alrighty. Just to show you one more of them, the other one I want to show is just a way of embarrassing someone. And I won't tell you who this person is, but they recorded a cover version of a Red Hot Chili Peppers song called Aeroplane.
I like pleasure spiked with pain.
It's not very musical, as you can hear.
And music is my aeroplane. My aeroplane.
Very bizarre. Okay. Now, one thing that Eric de Castro Lopo taught me, Eric was the bass player in the band that you were hearing earlier, and Eric also wrote libsoundfile, which does the wave file and so forth importing in this, and also the sample rate conversion library that Sweep uses. And he's done a lot of audio engineering work, hardware engineering for audio systems. And so he knows this stuff, and he said that, okay, compression, which is what I'm about to show you, is normally used just to make stuff sound punchy and make it sound good. But what the Red Hot Chili Peppers do, and unfortunately I couldn't use an original recording of Red Hot Chili Peppers due to copyright reasons, but I hope the cover version suffices. What the Chili Peppers do is use compression as an effect. Now I'll show you what compression is by running it. Basically, it's not anything like data compression like you'd be used to. It's a simple compressor. What it does, I'll just type in some magic numbers here. If you want to find out what these mean, then I guess read the tute notes from yesterday or something like that. Okay. So you'll see that this is the original look at the waveform, and this is the compressed look. What a compressor does is compresses down all the sort of peaks and the louder dynamics of the sound.
I like pleasure spiked with pain.
And the reason people do this is to get rid of dynamics, make things sound always at a constant level. It's used on radio all the time. The output of the radio station gets compressed, and then you can hear it, and then it doesn't matter if you're in a noisy environment. You can always hear what's going on, even if people talk louder and softer or whatever. What the Red Hot Chili Peppers do, though, is they go, that's a cool effect. Let's, use it to the max. So we'll run the compressor again. If I can find it again. I can't spell. It always confuses people that the plugins are in alphabetical order. Okay. Okay, so it's chopped off a lot of the peaks. I'll make it a bit louder now as well, just because it made it quieter by doing that.
I like pleasure spiked with pain. And music.
Okay, so it starts to get a bit sort of more raspy, and you get this sort of weird effect thing happening. It's actually used there as a distortion. There are also different ways of doing distortion. You can distort sounds just by making them way too loud. So, for example, if we choose the Chebyshev distortion. No, not Barry's. We're not doing Barry's. We did that yesterday and we almost blew out the speakers. Foldover distortion. Okay, so you go, I don't understand what this distortion thing does, but let's just drive it to the max and skew it, because that sounds like fun.
It's my aeroplane. It's my aeroplane.
Foldover is a very special kind of distortion. But, Barry Satan Maximizer, on the other hand.
My Explorer
is a bit less subtle. Alright, I'm going to stop that there, but basically the distortion is not so much, well, it's a way of life, and you can distort things any way you want. If it comes out different to how it started, it's a distortion. There are other actually useful plugins. So I did a compression, and what I did before that, I did some EQing, which lets you change the frequency bands and frequency ranges and things like that. A chorus is something that makes it sound like many people are singing or speaking at once, and you can run low-pass and high-pass filters to get rid of ranges that you want. Reverberation makes you mimic the sound characteristics of different rooms and that kind of thing. Alrighty, so that was editing. Next one is going to demo some of the more fun stuff that you can do with Sweep. So far you've seen all the stuff that you can do if you're a serious editing person. You can edit sounds, and that's all great. But I like having a bit more fun with this software, so I'm going to get rid of that silly sample. One thing that you can do next is, okay, load up a file and play it. And I thought, well, that's all cool. And when you've got a file loaded up like this, then you've got this really cool interactive sort of scrubbing console. But wouldn't it be more fun, like, you know, if you could load up a few more files at the same time, you know, play with them. And then when you've done that, you really want to play files backwards as well, right? So obviously you can have a lot more fun when you do stuff like that. So you can load up as many files as you want, and I've often had like 20 or 30 files going at once and lots of loops, and let's put some bass into that. To screw up. I mean, you can hear sounds happening, and then I just want to like load up a file and hear what it sounds like and things like that. This is what DJs do all the time, okay? So they have, well, not quite this, but they'll have a couple of turntables and they'll play one song, then they'll like get the other one lined up and want to play that. So what you need for that, for a job like that, you need some cool looking headphones, right? And you put them on the side of your head like this. And now. So you do that for a few hours and then the neighbors come down and complain. Do I have a deal with my neighbors? Yeah, but it's like 9:30 p.m. or something. After that, it's all bad. So, but my friends' neighbors, who I've jammed with, they don't complain. In fact, they're like a bunch of drunken New Zealanders who just come over and party. So that's all good. Okay, so with that, I showed the last 2 points on this slide here, which is that you can play many files simultaneously. You can play as many as you want. You can play as many to the headphones as you want at a time. You can play as many to the main output as you want at a time. You can switch them to the headphones on the fly. You can switch the output, whether it goes to the speakers or the headphones, as you're going. Now, the other thing you want to be able to do if you're DJing is to make sound, or music files, records, I was going to say, go faster or slower, so you can match them up in time, match them up in the position they're playing at. Sweep has a couple of cool ways of doing that. Where's the file? I'm just going to find the file that I had yesterday. No, I won't do that. I don't want to embarrass Martin Poole again. Yeah, I'll play this one. This is just a...
It began in Africa.
A sample you might be familiar with. And one thing you can do with Sweep that comes from tracker programs is that you can play on the keyboard using the QWERTY keyboard as a music keyboard. So you can go...
It began.
Stuff like that. And it plays from wherever the mouse is, so that means that you can do things
it
like that.
It began in Africa.
Yeah, cool. And then once you've got that, you can say, well, I'm sick of this.
In Africa.
I don't like that vinyl effect. What you really want to do is have this elite sort of drum and bass effect, and so you go, ooh, keyboards have got a carapace, don't they?
It began in Africa.
And, that's the sort of cheap effect you can get. But you can play around with that stuff live. You can play with it while all the beats are going and that kind of thing. What I did just then was I held down a key which triggers a restart of the sample at the point where the mouse is. And I held the key down so that the key repeat in X11 kicked in and went, keep restarting it. Very simple. Basically, that's just re-triggering a sample at a point which gives you that effect. Alrighty. So that's some of the DJing stuff you can do. There are other things which I won't go into today, like recording and having a loop recording going and doing tape loop kinds of things that you can also do with it. And I mean, the thing to do there is just get yourself some, well, you need 2 sound cards to do what I did just now. So here I've got a sound card at the back of this box here, and a headphones plugged into the front on the onboard sound. You can configure which devices you want to be using there. So I've got DevDSP1 for the main output and DevDSP for the monitoring, and just works out the rest automatically. Okay, you can change the buffering of the device, and this is all just application latency stuff, which we're about to go into. Because user space is lit, and this is where we're at. What we're talking about here is monitoring the application latency. We're not talking about low latency in the kernel or anything like that. I'm running a stock kernel here just because I'm expecting I'm using this for targeting this at desktop users, people who are just using normal machines on SAN distros or whatever. So I want this to work as well as it can on those. Sure, stick a low latency kernel on this, use different drivers, whatever, then maybe you can improve your performance. But I don't want to remove the responsibility of making this run all right from myself. So I'm dealing with the default sort of setup that most people have. Okay, now the default buffering in OSS is huge, that's fine. That's easily set in the application. But sometimes it's needed. I mean, it depends on how loaded the system is. I can't assume that the only thing people are doing on their computer is running Sweep, right? I mean, it might be the only thing that I do, but other people are strange. So what you have to do here is, you've got this buffer between the application and the actual sound you can hear. And humans don't really like that. Like, if you're playing on a music keyboard and you press a key, you want the sound to come out straight away. If it comes out half a second later, it's really disconcerting, especially if you're trying to, like, play a melody. And your feedback is, like, half a second late. And it's even worse if that latency sort of changes. So Okay, so that's why low latency is important in audio stuff. But what we're doing here is you've basically got a you've got like a video game on screen. You've got this thing that's moving around and playing sounds, and you can hear the sounds that are coming out, and they have to match up with what's on screen. So what's important is to keep track, not so much is to draw what is being played, as opposed to respond in, you know, 10 milliseconds to what's being interacted. People, when you scrub, you want that to be interactive, but you can deal with a little lag. You can deal with time little lag if you can see the lag and if you know what's going on. And also you want a bit of sort of smoothing of the movement, otherwise it sounds too direct. That's just part of the scrubbing, of the sort of vinyl emulation. You don't want instantaneous, you get a lot of jitter off the mouse, you need to smooth that out anyway. Okay, you might notice there when I was moving that around that there was a little green line moving sort of behind the mouse a little bit, okay, there's sort of one swimming after the other. What I'm doing there is I'm tracking what's actually being played. I'm tracking the end of the buffer with the green line. That's the green one with the little play symbol next to it. That's what you're actually hearing. The white one is the user's control thing. This is where I want to be. You can't really expect a program to... Okay, they're two different things, right? What some programs, what most people try to do is just assume they're one. You know, you've just got one cursor. That's what you're interacting with here. Something will know, okay, this is the real world. There is a buffer playing there. Let's render that so that people see what's actually being played with the green line, no matter where they're moving the white line, okay? So you move the white line around and the green line follows it, and you hear what's played on the green line. It's much less disconcerting. And the way that works is that you have this big buffer, this big circular buffer of audio data being played. So how do you fight big buffers with other big buffers of where the user interface was at that point, or where the user interface should be to represent where the audio was when you wrote it half a second ago or a tenth of a second ago or whatever. So whatever's happening in the driver with keeping track of buffers of audio, I keep track of where the user interface should be, and then when that's being played, I draw where the user interface should be. And that's that, pretty simple. And it works. And it means that you get the interactive control, you get the precise control being able to see where your hand is, and you also get to see where the audio is. Simple. Next bit, not so simple. Excuse me. And makes me sad. Dissecting Scrubby. Everyone wants to know how Scrubby works, and I want to know how Scrubby works. Scrubby just appeared. I mean, this dude just appeared on my screen one day. Had this little icon that big, and then the next thing I knew, the GIMP had gone, whoa, Scrubby. Or Scrubby had gone, whoa, Scrubby. And there he is. Okay, so what Scrubby does is emulates the physics of a turntable. People like turntables. They're a very interactive way of dealing with audio. You can move the record around. You can hear exactly where it is. It's good for editing because you can play a sound really slowly and just interactively get to the point you want to cut. It's good for DJing because it sounds cool. So the way it works is that it slows down as you slow down, it speeds up as you speed up. It has a bit of momentum, which means that, first up, it has a bit of smoothing, which is what I was talking about, that it gets rid of jittering in the mouse. Also has that little bit of lag, smooths out, has a bit of momentum so that you can throw it, catch it, throw it. There's people like that, and that's a lot like sort of spinning back record and letting go and things like that. So what you have there is, within sweep, you have a drive that sort of keeps playing, and you can imagine that the play position always wants to move as if there's a motor behind it, and you can pick up the needle or you can pick up the thing and throw it around. So it sort of models each portion of the turntable, the drive and the slipping and the stylus itself independently. The last bit of that is the most important, or one of the most important parts, is the sound you get. So it's not just a matter of resampling what's there. People actually like the sound of vinyl, not just because it lets you speed things up and slow it down nicely, but vinyl actually does this physical filtering on the audio, which makes it sound a bit nicer, gets rid of a lot of the high end as you're scratching or as you're moving it around. The reason that is that the audio on vinyl is stored in a groove, it's cut into the record like that, with one side giving the information, giving the audio wave for the right channel and one for the left channel. So you can imagine it sort of like moving like that. And as you spin it faster than it's meant to be going, the stylus goes, ooh, okay, what's this? So let's say you've got like some little peak in one of the sides of the vinyl record. The stylus will, instead of following that peak around like that, it'll go woo, like that, okay? And you'll actually sort of, when you've got little peaky bits like that, it'll jump them, it'll smooth around. And what happens there is that you're losing that bit, the jaggy bit, where you've got high frequency stuff. So if it moves really quickly, which means that it's a high pitch sound wave, those bits sort of get lost, but the lower frequency part of the sound is kept. So there's a little bit of a low pass filter in the scrubbing algorithm to emulate that, so that as you're flicking it around faster, then it just goes, oh, okay, and it sort of smooths out the wave as it's scrubbing through it. It gives a much warmer sound because you don't get the sort of high frequency noise coming in as much as you would if you just did a straight resample. It slightly modifies the tone of the sound. People are used to that, and also it just does sound sort of nicer and warmer. So that's basically what scrubby involves there. Alrighty. This is a bit where I get to talk about the future. And the reason I'm comfortable doing that is because I've got this thing called LibMash. It's currently got a different name, but that does not matter, which does all these sort of things. Handles large files, which Swift doesn't handle that well at the moment at all. Handles multi-track, that should say. Swift already does multi-channel editing, which means that you can have four or five channels, not just left and right, but you can deal with surround sound and stuff like that in the file. What I meant right there is multi-track, which is where you can say, this is my guitar, and this is the piano, and this is the drums, or whatever, and I want to work on each of them independently, but the timing matters, they play together. And you can edit each track independently. Multi-layered editing is also something that's in this LibMash thing, which is kind of like layering in the GIMP, where you can have your data, and then you can put new bits of data and filters and things like that on top of them, and store that sort of stack of operations, and then render that out later. And parameter envelopes are things where instead of saying, here's a big block of data, run an EQ on it with these numbers or whatever, you can actually say how you want the numbers to change, so you can run an envelope over each parameter through that. So I've got the back end, which is this LibMash thing, and hopefully through this year I'll be able to write a front end for that. So it'll be very sexy and do all this multi-track, multi-layered stuff, and maybe I can tell you all about that next year. That's all for this talk. Hopefully, we'll go and play with this, and then Scrubby will have you. You can find out more info at the site, which is sweep.sourceforge.net, or at meddex.org. There's a mailing list for users and develop and stuff, or just email me if you feel like hassling me. I'll just take questions then. Yep. Which, sorry? No, I haven't heard of that one. It does not do MP3 encoding for legal reasons. No, third-party programs for it. No, it doesn't. No. Yeah, you can always save it to WAV and export it. Yep. This is GTK1 still. No, that's something I wrote. That's the main sort of interaction there. No, it's very, that main widget has all the interaction of scrubbing and stuff in it. Not the scrubbing itself, but the GUI stuff for it. So that's pretty tied to what Swift does. Yep, back. What I'm doing with sound here is pretty simple. I'm just reading PCM data and writing PCM data out. Things like ALSA, which I'm not directly using here, have better support for multi-channel and stuff like that. But a lot of the real changes that people are looking for, I guess, are in, or the real power is in MIDI and things like that, which this program's not using. there are things in multitrack and so forth with having, you know, streamed file systems and things like that. But I mean, I'm not really qualified to answer that. I'm not working on that stuff. Or Swift does not need that kind of thing right now. Yep. Some scrubby code. I could do that. I'll take some more questions first, and then we'll do that. Yep. Which files? No, it doesn't deal with MIDI files. It's just straight audio. So MIDI is more about sequencing and note on, note out of, note off information, stuff like that. It's not part of that. Yep, you're. Played with it a lot. Basically, the aim here is more speed and efficiency than accuracy. It has to be done really quickly and, you know, on the fly as it's working out what to play. So, I mean, you could write a better model, but having that working in real time would be a lot harder. Yeah. The turntable dynamics are hard-coded into it at the moment, but there are a couple of little numbers which correspond exactly to little knobs I saw on a CD DJing machine last week, and so I'm quite keen to make that configurable. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there's an excellent product that got released about 6 months ago, which I think is the one you're talking about, called Final Scratch, which uses... what you get in the product is a couple of vinyl records which have time codes on them. You hook that up to your existing turntables and mix it because you're a DJ. You also get a little box which has USB stuff on it, which you plug all this into, and you plug into your laptop. It provides... it comes with its own whole system. Commercially available product, boots into a Linux-based MP3 DJing program, and you can manage MP3 playlists, and you can choose what you want to play, and then you directly control the play positions of the MP3s with the turntables. So you use actual stylus and actual turntable. You get real turntable physics where you've got vinyl sitting on a split mat, sitting on a direct drive turntable. You can move each of those. All the stylus actually does is picks up position information, sends that to the computer, that plays the MP3s from that point, sends that through back to your mixer, then you can do all your mixing and stuff, and you can do all your scratching and things like that with the real analog interface that you'd be used to. But you manage all your playlists and everything on the computer, so you don't need to lug around boxes of records and things like that. I'd like to get my hands on something like that, so if you've got one, feel free to lend it to me. Right, yeah. That's not something I'm directly into, but there are people in the Linux audio community who are working on that kind of stuff and making generic ways of doing time code on vinyl. Yeah. Not that much. They've been very quiet, and I mean, they like it. As far as I know, they do very simple editing with it. I mean, they just use it for doing, you know, sound effects and voices and things like that. They've actually been very quiet, and I don't want to assume too much about why that is. I'm not going to go there. But I know that they're using it and they like it, so that's that. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, Terminator X is another program on Linux which does DJ stuff. It lets you control the speed of playback using the mouse, and that's been around for a couple of years, and what guys have been doing there is hooking up real turntables to mice playing with that. That kind of thing would work in Swift as well. Terminator X doesn't have the same kind of direct sort of visual control of what you're doing, but it has a pretty cool sound, and it's really more aimed if you are a DJ, then you know, then you'd find it probably well, easy to use as well. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you all. Hope you enjoy it, and play with it when you can.